This episode is brought to you by the movie The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, only in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who did The Gentlemen, and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who did Top Gun Maverick.
Based on a true story, this action comedy reveals the first ever Special Forces mission executed during World War II.
Starring Henry Cavill and Alan Ritchson, discover how one mission changed history, laying the foundation for modern Black Ops warfare.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is rated R and in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio. Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. That's our one and only super producer, Max Williams. Give him a hand, folks. They called me Ben. Noel, you and I have started traveling again. I think you've had some adventures. I've got some on the way that I can't disclose quite yet. But I don't think either of us has ever been to Albania.
No, I've been to Albany. Is that the same thing? Albany, Georgia? Yeah. Yeah. Or Albany, New York. I haven't been to Albany, New York. You know, I've actually never been to Albany, New York or Georgia. I was lying. But those would definitely be more in like my, you know, immediate region of travel. Albania sounds like a real exotic destination.
Oh, yeah. I read the Wiki Travel articles for different countries all the time and expat forums, et cetera, et cetera. And Albania has an amazing, unique history, kind of a crossroads between Europe and the rest of the world to the east, especially the Ottoman Empire. It wasn't until November of 1912 that Albania proclaimed its independence from the Ottoman Empire. And that's part of where our story takes place today, because it turns out, you may not have heard of this guy, but Albania, for a little less than a week, had a king named King Otto the First. And he was king for about 5 days.
Yeah. We don't want to spoil this, so let's save the surprise for just a little bit further and go into the events that led up to this elaborate subterfuge that started in the autumn of 1912 when the Balkan League's conquest of the Ottoman Empire's European territories started a massive international crisis that was going to cause lots of problems in Europe, in general. There could have been a massive European-wide war that was triggered by this diplomatic crisis.
Yeah. And as we know, there is going to be a not just European war, but a world war a few years later. It's on the way. Yeah, it's baking in the oven as we speak. The crisis comes about because Serbia wanted to get access to the Adriatic Sea, and Austria-Hungary was dead set against it. They were like, no way, Serbia, stay in your lane. And because of this dispute, Austria-Hungary was on a, it was coming into clear conflict, not with just Serbia, but with Serbia's big daddy at the time, Russia. And then, you know, the way that these wars happen, the way these big multiple state wars happen is because of those alliances between countries. They create a domino effect, right? It's like if you are picture, if Max and Noel and you listening along at home, Ridiculous Historian, picture the four of us are hanging out. We're having, we're going bowling or something, and people in the next lane, one of them starts a fight with Max. I don't know why you would. He's the nicest guy. And then you, Ridiculous Historian, and Noel and myself are like, hey, you mess with that guy, you mess with all of us. We're basically like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles here.
It's true. And then all of a sudden, there's no demarcation between the lanes anymore, and you're not bowling anymore. You're just kind of brawling at a bowling alley, which isn't very cute. That's just bad behavior is what that is. And then all of a sudden, neighboring lanes get involved because they're
exactly.
Like, yo, you're totally screwing up our lane with your, you know, irresponsible behavior, and we're not going to have that. Bowling is expensive. You got to rent the shoes. I mean, each game, it's like, it's a real commitment. You know, you got chicken wings probably getting cold now because you're not paying them attention because you're brawling with your neighbor. And that's not good for anybody, is it?
No, not at all. In our bowling alley situation here, it's easy to trace. It's actually not a bad comparison because, okay, Austria is beefing with Serbia. Serbia has their big brother, Russia. And if Russia beefs with Austria-Hungary, then Austria-Hungary's boy Germany is going to come in, and then Russia's pal France is going to jump in as well. So this would lead to catastrophe. On November 21st, 1912, Austria-Hungary mobilized 6 Army Corps near Russia and Serbia. This was clearly a threat of the possibility of war.
Oh, yeah. But the foreign minister of Austria-Hungary, Count Berchtold, it's a great name. I love a good count. He had plans of his
monocle.
Own. Absolutely. Yeah. A curly mustache, you know, a thin, you know, curly on the ends mustache. He had plans of his own. He wanted to support an independent Albania, or a bid for an independent Albania.
Also, guys, I went ahead and looked up what Count Berchtold looks like. And he is exactly what you'd think he would look like.
Amazing.
You know, some stereotypes exist for a reason. You can't really be a count unless you have some sort of outrageous appearance involving.
You got to have some head accessories, you know.
No question about it. Yeah.
I don't know which one's better. There's like the one with his military gear on, but then there's also the one with just the top hat. And I kind of like the top hat one better.
Ooh, top hat. Okay. That's when the count's unwinding, you know.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Getting his leisure time in. Okay, so this gets a little complicated in terms of just the interplay between all of these nations and the various motivations at work. But let's just try to simplify it a little bit. Berchtold, in his infinite monocle-wearing wisdom, he wanted to stop Serbia from getting access to the Adriatic Sea. And also, he wanted to avoid that larger war that we talked about earlier. In doing this, he wanted to support an independent Albania, where Serbia had already staked a claim to that position on the Adriatic Sea. Neighboring Montenegro and Greece also in this arrangement would potentially lose parts of Albanian territory that they had claimed. Montenegro in particular, this would include some important strategic locations like the city of Scutari, which is where Turkish forces were already under siege by Serbian and Montenegrin forces. Okay. Think we've kind of got the lay of the land in terms of like the way our risk board pieces are laid out. Ben, what happens next?
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. When Dr. Sabah and I decided to do a skincare line together, he said to me, "We are going to give women meaningful beauty." And I said, "That's exactly right. We want to give women meaningful beauty, which means each and every product is meaningful. It has a reason to exist. It's efficacious. You're going to get results. And then you just go out and live your life."
Meaningful beauty. Confidence is beautiful. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
See new things. Try new things. Go back centuries while living in the moment. Forge new paths while discovering old ones. Pedal, paddle, and paint while trekking, tasting, and tailoring experiences that transform you into a better version of yourself. Immerse yourself in the world by activating your mind, your heart, and your body on a river cruise exclusively from Avalon Waterways. Save with limited time offers at AvalonWaterways.com. Avalon is cruising. Elevated.
So this is clever on Berchtold's part, because now it's becoming kind of a proxy war, right? Now the issue isn't Austria-Hungary directly fighting Serbia. Now we're supporting something. We're supporting Albania. And Albania looks good for this. They already had rebelled against the Ottoman Empire earlier that same year. And in as a result of their rebellion, the Ottoman Empire promised them a little bit more autonomy. And now the Albanians are threatened with the possibility of even more oppression by the Orthodox Christians in Serbia. And Albanians are mostly Muslim at this time. So they say, okay, forget about it. We're gonna go for full independence. Autonomy is not enough. And just to be clear, folks, Serbia and Albania already had a well-established history of conflict. We're talking about stuff like the First Balkan War. We're talking about earlier atrocities committed against the people of Serbia by both Turkish and Albanian forces. You can even read about this in the New York Times from 1912, December 31st, last day of 1912, where they say thousands of men, women, and children were massacred during the Serbs' march to the sea as part of a deliberate policy to exterminate people of the Muslim faith.
Oh, wait a minute. Exterminate all members of the... This is the first I've heard of this, Ben. What's the beef there?
Well, the idea there is ideologically motivated. It's also resource motivated. The general Western consensus of this was that the Serbian forces were fighting dirty, using unjustifiable murder. And this, of course, would foreshadow later atrocities to come. But all to say, what you need to know about this is Count Berthold was definitely aware of this past enmity, and he was leveraging this, again, in a relatively complex geopolitical calculation to keep the Serbs from getting that sea access. And this is where we meet a guy named Ismail Kemali. Ismail Kemali would be the protagonist of this Albanian move for self-determination.
Ismail Kemali was a former Ottoman admin. Let's just call him that in the parlance of our time. He was a bureaucrat. He was the father of Albanian nationalism, which, if I'm not mistaken, Ben, nationalism typically, you know, you could look at it on one hand as like patriotism, but it usually involves some sort of othering and ideals of exterminating those that are different than us, or at the very least, keeping them at arm's length. Isn't that right?
Yeah. It's the idea of being, of strongly identifying with one's own nation and what you see as that nation's goal, especially to the exclusion of the interest of other nations. So like, right. if we were strong nationalists in a way that nationalism goes wrong, let's say we wanted to do something that was very good for Maine, but it was very bad for all the parts of Canada connected to Maine. As nationalists, our response would be, well, who cares? That's Canada. That's not us. Go USA.
Other parts of Canada be damned. Yeah, Maine is number one. Maine uber alles. So this guy, father of Albanian nationalism, Ismail Kemali, he comes back from exile. He's been exiled. And with some help, with a little bit of a boost or, you know, an assist from Austria-Hungary, he convenes an assembly of Albanian nationalists at Vlorë. It's got the umlaut over the E. Vlorë. I don't know if I'm saying that right. It's got the umlaut over the E. So I'm thinking the E is an U sound.
Just picture it in your mind.
I'm picturing it in my mind and trying to say the way the picture looks, but they're not quite adding up. But I will sally forth. So they didn't really have much leverage in terms of actual control of Albanian territory besides that town that I'm picturing the word of in my mind right now. But on November 28th, 1912, the delegates of this council declared Albanian independence. So that's sort of like, what is that called? Overplaying your hand a little bit, Ben? You don't actually have much juice, you know, or suction in the situation, but you make an outrageous claim, hoping that maybe that in and of itself will be enough to convince people that you're like the person for the job or that you know what you're talking about.
Yeah, this is a tricky part of geopolitics, and it's one that I think people should talk about more often in public and in the mainstream. So if you want to secede or if you want to declare independence, what makes your government legitimate? It's such a silly rule, but it's an important one. Your government becomes legitimate when other world governments say, okay, that's legit. So for instance, take California. Here in the U.S., California is a state. It has an enormous GDP, like it's huge compared to other countries, just that state alone. And if California tried to secede, its legitimacy would hinge on the international community and on the U.S. So if other countries basically said, okay, we believe you, California, you're a country now, then that would be like the number one step. So that's what Albania and Kemali are hoping to do here. Like you said, they form their government, they form their own national government, and this national government, its representatives choose Kemali as president. But a couple of legislative decisions by a legislature that is yet to be internationally recognized, they don't do much to dispel the facts on the ground, which is that the Serbian forces and their pals from our earlier bowling alley example are still occupying most of Albania. And they're not going to leave. They're not going to be like, oh, there was a vote. Oh, my bad. All right, TTYL. No.
Back to our own lanes. Time to resume our bowls, our separate bowls, and put on blinders to each other. No, that was not going to happen because the lane change had already taken place and you can't walk that back that easily. I'm sorry. Chicken wings be damned. So on November 28th, the Serbs captured an area called Durazzo. And the Greek Navy started to blockade that town, Vlorë, the one that I'm trying to picture better than I'm saying, on December 3rd. That's a big deal. You can't, that thing you're talking about, Ben, about establishing like some sort of international connection, you can't do that if you're being blockaded, right? That's literally, you know, what a blockade is. It keeps you from exercising trade with anybody or receiving things.
Oh, yeah. It's the divide and conquer for sure. So their attempt to declare independence at this point has only pushed the Serbs into further action. Austro-Hungarian forces are still up there near Serbia and Russia. The whole continent is waiting for the other monocle to drop. If Russia and
Austria... If you have two monocles, isn't that just a pair of glasses?
It depends on if you have the little bridge, right, over the nose.
That's true. You could have detachable glasses that become two separate monocles. That'd be a fun flex. Maybe each one is a different strength.
We're so far ahead of our time. Yeah. So the thing is, I mean, we're joking a little bit, but this is a very, very serious situation. It's scary. And we want to shout out Mental Floss, of course, who did some great work on this. What was the title of this one, Noel?
The title of this one, how did you know, Ben? I'm pulling it up right now. World War One Centennial, Albania Declares Independence, was one of the articles for Mental Floss that we have been looking at. And then another one was A New Albanian Crisis by Eric Sass, the Sass Master.
The Sassman himself. So, yes. So here's what happens. Everybody knows that if Russia and Austria-Hungary go to war with each other, all their allies, the other European great powers, are going to be sucked in. And so these tensions continue to ratchet up until Austria and Hungary eventually agree on a compromise. And all of the big fish, the big dogs of Europe at the time, meet at something called the Conference of London. And they agree that the best way to smooth this out and avoid war is, in fact, to create a new independent Albanian state. So problem solved. That's our episode. Thanks so much for tuning in.
No,
record scratch.
We were promised deception, most foul, and subterfuge, most elaborate. And mm-hmm. I don't think we hinted at circus performers yet, but we're going to go ahead and drop that hint right now.
Swallow
and,
some swords.
Sword swallowers. Let's do it. Yeah. I think we're at that place right now. So appreciate you coming along with us for this very, very inside baseball geopolitical portion of the episode. But here comes the fun stuff.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. When Dr. Sabah and I decided to do a skincare line together, he said to me, "We are going to give women meaningful beauty." And I said, "That's exactly right. We want to give women meaningful beauty, which means each and every product is meaningful. It has a reason to exist. It's efficacious. You're going to get results. And then you just go out and live your life."
Meaningful beauty. Confidence is beautiful. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Are the old world picturesque shores of Europe calling you? Set sail on an adventure with Avalon Waterways. Enjoy an elevated cruising experience. Avalon Waterways offers smaller ships, bigger experiences with fewer people and more of, well, everything good about river cruising. Don't just dream about quaint towns and cobblestone villages. See them for yourself and make lasting memories. Discover limited time offers today at AvalonWaterways.com.
Yes, here's the fun stuff. Okay, so the Albanian situation is not settled at all. Serbia and Montenegro are like, these guys, these fat cats over at the Conference of London, they don't know what they're talking about. We're nationalists. We're not giving up our claims that easily. So they have decided in a secret pact with Greece to divide Albania into Serbian and Greek kind of, you call them spheres of influence. And the Serbians never actually left Albania. They just said, oh, we're going to like supervise the border, blah, blah, blah. And at this point, folks, you're probably saying, hey, this Ismail Kemali dude, he's not the guy you guys mentioned at first, is he? He's a president, not a king. That's interesting that you say that, because now a new protagonist has entered our stage, an acrobat. A weird dude, which, you know, is always a compliment on our show. His name, Otto Witte. Am I saying that right, Noel? Witte?
I think so. Witte, yeah. Witte. I think Witte like bitter, like please. Yeah. Auf Deutsch. So the thing that's interesting about this, and the reason maybe some of this sounds like convoluted gobbledygook, is because a lot of these claims in these series, these accounts of events following that proclamation of independence from Albania, independence from the Ottoman Empire, are kind of disputed.
Yeah.
And what we're telling today is one version of the story. And in this version, the independence leaders chose their protector, or they essentially, you know, ensconced like a new leader, a temporary leader by the name of a person named Halim Edin, who is a Turkish prince. And in this version of the story, Edin shows up in Durres, which was the Albanian capital at the time, dressed in luxurious flowing robes and silks and adorned with fine incense and myrrh and oil, sweet-smelling perfumes, I assume, and, of course, was accompanied by a quite large valet, real bruiser of a bodyguard. He immediately declared amnesty for the prisoners of the conflict, declared a week of celebration, and he appointed all of these feudal lords a place in his new cabinet. Then he was presented with 25 presumably virgin women for his harem. Then everyone was really into this guy, and everyone was like, okay, we like this guy a lot. It was a very Prince Ali kind of situation. And they decided they wanted to formally crown him king, and they did that. Mm-hmm. He became King Otto. Yeah. For 5 days.
Yeah, yeah. So here's the thing. We're in a bit of a face-off situation now, in a good way. So Otto Witte, like we said, weird dude. He has spent most of his life kind of as what you would call a hobo, you know, kind of a carny. He's a lion tamer. He's a magician. He has a nomadic existence. He's traveled across multiple continents. He speaks Turkish fluently. Mm-hmm. And he also loves telling a good story. Like my old man, he will never let the truth get in the way of a good tale. And he was a major in the Ottoman army in 1912. And as the Ottoman Empire was disintegrating, Albania was becoming independent, they decided that the only way to really have security in the country was to crown a king. And Albanian people, again, largely Muslim population, would not ever go for your garden variety Christian king of some denomination or another. They wanted a king who was Muslim. So they said, what about this guy? This very striking figure that you just described, Noel, Halim Edin. That suggestion was made and people were on board. So the news was announced. They wanted this man, Edin, to be king. Witte is reading a story in a newspaper while he's living in Budapest. And he says, you know what? I look a lot like this guy. What if I just pull King Ralph with the John Goodman vehicle?
That's right. That was where I first learned the name of the very naughtily named British delicacy Spotted Dick.
Yes.
Because they make a real to-do of that in the movie King Ralph. So he's like, you know, I mean, I've done it before after all, right? Because one thing we didn't mention about his CV is that he actually, through a similar subterfuge, he was named the honorary chief of a pygmy tribe in Africa, largely because he was able to wow them with magic tricks and all of that good stuff. So maybe he wasn't necessarily lying. He was just, they loved him so much that they made him an honorary chief. Why not do it again? Only this time maybe involving a little bit more deception. So he sets off.
Yeah, he sets off. He says, you know what? I am fluent in Turkish. I'm going to pretend to be the king of Albania. And let me just hop on it, right? Let me strike while the iron is hot. He sends out some telegrams. You know, picture this scene in Aladdin where it's like Prince Ali, and so he's announcing his arrival. He literally rents an outfit that looks, you know, like the kind you described, because a normal person couldn't afford to buy something of that caliber. He packs his bags. He is joined by his ride or die, a guy named Max Schlipsig, who is a sword swallower. That's where that comes in. And at this time, they arrive in the then capital of Albania, Durres, And he convinces the locals with his wonderful gift of gab that he is, in fact, Halim ad-Din. He is crowned the new king the next week. Is amazing. He has an actual harem, which is a very problematic thing, but he definitely makes use of it. He has military parades. He's kicking it in one of the top tier tents for royals. He decides to declare war on Montenegro because he can. Like, how wild is his Wednesday and Thursday, you know?
What would you call this guy? Chaotic evil? Chaotic. He's chaotic something.
Chaotic neutral.
I don't think he's neutral, though, if he's declaring war on Montenegro just willy-nilly for kicks.
Well, chaotic neutral is essentially the primary guiding force of that alignment. Oh, God. Put on my nerdy D&D monocle here.
Let's hear it. No, put it on.
Is that they just follow the individual rules. It's like nationalism for one person.
I see. Okay, I got it. So he's an army of one. Not worried about anybody else. That makes sense. I mean, the whole thing, what does he think he's going to get out of this other than a handful of days of, like, you know, King Ralph type behavior? Obviously, he was not aware of that incredible seminal Hollywood classic at the time. But, like, did he think this was going to keep going? I mean, surely the real Adel Dazim was going to come. I'm sorry, I know that's not his name. That's just the name that John Travolta called Idina Menzel at the Oscars that one time, which, you know, made everybody on the internet laugh for weeks, months even. I continue to laugh at that joke. Halim ad-Din. Yeah, that's right. It's not that far off. Did he think that guy wasn't going to turn up? Like, I just don't understand what goes through the mind of a person like this. I mean, I guess it takes a different type to live that circus life and to just kind of, like, you know, fly by the seat of one's pants in such a dangerous way. Like, this seems like it would just result in him being executed, you know?
Yeah, you have to wonder. I think he got caught up in the love of the improv here and the love of the con. So, of course, a newly independent Albania, a new king, this makes international headlines. Newspapers and telegrams spend a lot of ink on it. The word spreads quickly, and the word eventually reaches Istanbul. And in Istanbul, this announcement is pretty confusing for the Sultan, because the Sultan knew his nephew, Halim ad-Din, was on vacation in Vienna. He physically was not in Albania. And eventually Vita has to realize, old Otto has to say, okay, maybe I jumped the gun a bit. So he and his pal, the sword swallower, say, okay, this grift might not last as long as we thought. They raid the treasury. They flee the country and they go to a place called Bari, B-A-R-I, with some help from some members of the harem who apparently they have formed a fast friendship with.
Imagine so. There's many reasons that could have happened. You know, this reminds me of, Ben, this reminds me of the reason that, or the very crux of, like, most of the plots of, like, 90s sitcoms, Seinfeld in particular. Like, all of these elaborate ruses and misunderstandings are only allowed to continue for as long as they do because of lack of, like, cell phone or, like, fast communication.
Sure, the Seinfeld
this
problem.
Seinfeld problem. This would have deemed this whole ruse would have fallen apart instantly if someone could have just, like, you know, checked the guy's passport or, like, scanned his, you know, face and compared it with an actual picture. This is one of those situations that hinges on a lack of technology and the ability to confirm people's stories, because he stuck to it hard. He committed to the bit until beyond the bitter end. Because as you said, Ben, Vita and Schlepsich actually raided the treasury. They made off with some cash. So there was a bit of a heist element here. And then they fled the country to Bari. And several years later, Vita, who is
alive,
shockingly alive. He writes a book, or his daughter rather writes a book, and he contributes to this book, you know, in the telling of this tale. His daughter, quote, Princess Elfrieda Vita, she refers to her father in the book as, quote, the greatest adventurer of all time. He somehow managed to escape any kind of criminal charges or prosecution or any kind of seemingly consequences whatsoever.
Yeah, yeah, that's the weirdest thing. He did more than just escape the consequences. he didn't get punished in any way, and people even today will say that this is just a tall tale the old man may have spun, because folks will, in their defense, they will rightly point out that there's not a shred of local evidence to back up any part of his story. Furthermore, if you look at the historical record of the Ottoman Empire, there is no Prince Halim. There is no Kaiser Soze.
Oh, yeah, that was about Ben. Out of my head, dude. I think we maybe spent a little too much time together. I was totally picturing that scene where you look at, well, this is actually the maybe
second
third,
time.
Yeah. Second time this has been referenced in the last few weeks between our various shows. But this is the part where at the end he's looking up at the board and he's just putting together stuff based on like words that are just like on like, you know, Kathy cartoons that are pinned to a cork board, you know, on the bottom of like a coffee mug. Yeah, and well, it makes sense, right? But if you think about it, I mean, the Albanians were so horrifically, you know, punked by this guy that maybe, and also this whole prince situation was only meant to be kind of a stopgap, or kind of, remember, they did not really have the upper hand. So this was all just kind of a farce almost in a way, or their ability to kind of create a front that made it look like they had it under control more than they actually did, if I'm not mistaken, because the Serbs were still breathing down their neck, right, Ben?
Yeah, yeah. This is still, I mean, that's the opinion of Vita's supporters, right? Is that the easiest way to say it is maybe they were embarrassed that they got played so hard, so they erased the evidence, which happens. Countries and empires do erase stuff. That's part of the gig.
Yeah, it was one of Stalin's favorite things to do with someone that, like, you know, looked at it wrong. He would just like literally cut their faces out of like all the photos that they were in together.
Why would you ever work for that guy? You know what I mean? It's like, anyway, that's an episode for another day. But
yeah, it sure is.
After all this does or does not happen, the funny thing is that Vita spends the rest of his life insisting on being called the former king of Albania, and the government of Germany capitulates to this insistence. He was able to have former king of Albania on his official German ID.
Wait, is that a thing? Can I get like a special line with some like, you know, what do you call that? Honorific, you know? Like, is that like sort of like the equivalent of getting like a vanity plate? I've never heard of this before.
You can, it's a little different in the US, but you can't, what you can do, there's a loophole. Where I'm not officially condoning, and I'm not officially saying it's surprisingly easy to do this. Again, I'm not officially saying it is surprisingly easy to do this. You have to commit to the bit, though. If you legally change your name to something that sounds like an honorific or a title, then it will be put on, you know, your passport, your driver's license, your fishing license, your totem chit, whatever.
Is there any law against having more than one middle name, or having like multiple? I didn't think so, right? Mm-hmm. So I could be like Noel Christian, cool guy, McGee Brown, you know?
Yeah.
If I wanted to go all the way with it.
The only thing is, I think, I can't remember, the law might be state by state, but the main thing is a judge has to agree and think it's a serious thing. So you might have a tougher time if you're like, if I went to court and said, I'm going to change my name to Snakebite McFistpunch, then I would need to have a reason why.
You would need to demonstrate just unbridled badassery to that judge. And then sock him one. And he would just be like, yeah, I like the cut of this guy's jib. Snake bite, McFist punch it is. And then he would also, you know, probably send you to jail for contempt or assault at the very least.
Probably, yeah. But with that, is it possible? There may be a law, I don't know yet, but there may be a law that says, like, Max can name himself anything he wants, as long as it doesn't mean that he's impersonating like it's not for identity theft or identity fraud, you know?
Probably there are rules against having swears in there too, I would imagine.
Yes.
I would just imagine. I don't know for sure.
Right. Which is why Snakebite doesn't have a middle name.
Snakebite McFarlane fuck around and find out.
Punch.
Fist punch. McGillicuddy.
Yes.
Bolin.
The third. Yes. Yeah. It's a long line. It's a tradition. So let us know if you have ever gone to court and said, you know, something along the lines of, Your Honor, I would like to change my name to Viscount, you know, whatever, or Duke, blah, blah, blah. But that's what this guy did. That's what the German government let him do. So in a way, whether or not the story happened, he was successful.
You know what else he did?
Hmm.
He died.
Yeah, he did.
On August 13th of 1958, the 45th anniversary of his possible coronation. So again, we want to make it real clear, right, if we had like all the war-y stuff that we said, all of that kind of boring geopolitics stuff, that's all true. This part may or may not be true because, you know, things get lost in these kind of kind of conflicts, you know, details. So I'd like to believe that this is true. Otto Witte definitely was a real person. So we know that much.
That's
we
true.
Know that he died on August 13th of 1958. Ben, do you know, I'm going to put you on the spot here for a little trivia. Do you know what symbol the Albanian flag bears?
I do, because I've been watching a lot of weird stuff involving Albania recently. It is an eagle, but it is an eagle that does not exist in the natural world. It's an eagle with two heads, and it's kind of, I think they're facing opposite directions, right? Like one's facing left, one's facing right.
Yeah, it's a symbol of fortitude, nationalism, and empire, and the two heads are said to represent the northern and southern portions of the country. And something that's wrapped up in local folklore, the Albanian name for itself is it's weird, dude. It's got a Q after an SH. How do you do that? Shkperia. I think so. Shkperia. Which literally translates to Land of the Eagles. They must really love Hotel California. That's their national song there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the national band as well. All of whom speak Albanian, all of the Eagles. And
real big when they stop in that country. But yeah, that's all we got for today. A nice short and sweet one. A very interesting, potentially tall tale, situated amidst a very, very real story of a conflict.
Yeah, and I, you know what I'd love to hear from our fellow ridiculous historians would be other stories of great acts of impersonation like this. This is a con. He did hurt people, to be clear, because he stole the national treasury or stole from it. So we can't condone it. But there's something I cannot help but admire about the ambition, the sheer audacity of this sort of con. So let us know if there are other stories throughout history that seem similar. We'd love to hear about these rogues and ne'er-do-wells. In the meantime, thank you, as always, for tuning in. Thanks so much to our one and only super producer, Max Williams, who is Johnny on the spot when it comes to looking up obscure members of the aristocracy. Thanks to Casey Pegram and Noel, as always, man. Thanks to you. I feel like we could pull this off. If it weren't for cell phones, I feel like we could pull something like this off.
You and I?
Yeah. Yeah,
I could be your wingman. I could be your wingman. Yeah, we could have dual wingman. I'll be the left head of the eagle. Max can be the right. And you can be the imposter to the throne.
Great. Just in case podcasting doesn't work out for us, what country will we try for? We'll have to talk about this off air because no spoilers.
Definitely not. We'll see you next time, folks. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This episode is brought to you by the movie The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, only in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who did The Gentlemen, and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who did Top Gun Maverick.
Based on a true story, this action comedy reveals the first ever Special Forces mission executed during World War II.
Starring Henry Cavill and Alan Ritchson, discover how one mission changed history, laying the foundation for modern Black Ops warfare.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is rated R and in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
What's up, y'all? Janice Torres here.
And I'm Austin Hankwitz.
We're the hosts of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories, a podcast presented by iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios and Intuit QuickBooks. Join us as we speak with small business owners about the tools they use to turn their ideas into success.
From finding that initial spark of entrepreneurship to organizing payments and invoices, we've got you covered. So follow and listen to Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are the old world picturesque shores of Europe calling you? Set sail on an adventure with Avalon Waterways. Enjoy an elevated cruising experience. Avalon Waterways offers smaller ships, bigger experiences with fewer people and more of, well, everything good about river cruising. Don't just dream about quaint towns and cobblestone villages. See them for yourself and make lasting memories. Discover limited time offers today at AvalonWaterways.com.